So today is May 1st, 2015, and this is Nancy Emerson. I'm here with Verna Perino in her home on Buena Vista Avenue in Mill Valley. And today, Verna, we're going to talk about opera and more things that come to your mind, right?
Right. It's wonderful to have a passion, to be interested in something that is so exciting for you that it takes over your life. And I've been fortunate as growing up when I was in high school to have it recommended to me that I listen to the Metropolitan radio broadcasts, and that changed my life. I developed an interest and a knowledge, but then that sort of went by the wayside as I went on to college and worked at the Mayo Clinic for a couple of years, and then came to San Francisco to visit my brother, who was working on his PhD at Cal, and I fell in love with the city. It's a wonderful city and so diversified, and it opened my eyes to another world. But I went to the opera only a couple of times because tickets were offered to people in the service, and I was working for the Red Cross, and so I got some freebie tickets. Then time passed. I got married and had a child, a daughter. And then my husband passed away very suddenly from a stroke in 1967. And we were on a trip in Arizona. And that first year was very difficult, but I managed, and that seemed to become my mantra from there on, that I learned to manage. I learned to do things that I'd never heard of before. I could hammer nails, and I could saw, and I could do gardening. And I loved having a home in Mill Valley. Mill Valley is a very special place, and I love my yard, my fruit trees, my flowers, but I needed something more than that. Weekends were very long and sad and lonely, and I went back to opera, and Dick and I had not been able to go to the opera, but we collected many recordings, and we would listen to opera every weekend and choose a different opera to concentrate on. And my husband being Italian and his family being opera lovers, his mother singing in the chorus of the San Francisco Opera, we listened to a lot of Italian opera. It became a way of life for me, and now, almost 50 years later, it has become not only a passion for my life's enjoyment, but so much of a way of life for me. My whole life became revolved around opera, and I can't concentrate enough or say enough about the wonderful opportunity of having something so exciting in your life that it carries you through all the hard times. And there were hard times. I went back to work and finally decided that My volunteer work was more important than the little money I was supplementing my Social Security in. And so I continued with my joy of opera. And as times changed, I added to the records that we had and borrowed recordings from the library and recorded them on cassettes and got libretti and became a volunteer for the San Francisco Opera Guild, the Marin chapter, and took on several volunteer jobs there, including the preview chairman's job for the chapter. I wanted to know more, and so I started going to previews that were held in at the Ross Valley Center. And from there, we had to change to different venues, and we had our previews in Tiburon at a school, and then in Mill Valley at the Park School. And acoustics were a problem, and my job was to research and find speakers who were knowledgeable on Wagner and all operas, but Wagner became uppermost in my interest and activities, so it came to mind first of all. I learned to meet wonderful, outstanding people who were experts in the field of opera. Depending upon what the San Francisco Opera was performing, and we would choose 8 of the operas to preview, and the major ones were in the fall, and then there was a summer season, so we previewed those also. And I can't tell you how many trips I took to the library, looking up reference books, bibliographies. Since we didn't have money to bring people here from Europe, I would not pay any attention to those who came from France or other places. But if they had written books in English, then I became more interested in getting in touch with them. We had 6 different chapters, well, actually 5, but we worked with the San Jose Opera Guild and then shared the opportunity of having these outstanding speakers speak to each of our groups. And in the process, we had a lot of people come from Sonoma, so in the flyers that I sent out listing who was speaking when and about what, I included a little tear-off. Were any of the people in Sonoma County interested in forming a chapter there where they wouldn't have to come down to Marin County to hear about opera? And that grew into a chapter. And so we had our speakers speak in venues in Sonoma, different places that finally concentrated mainly on one venue that was convenient. Then we had previews in the East Bay for the chapter there, and down the peninsula, and in the city, in San Jose. And we formed a committee of the presidents, or rather the preview chairman from each of those chapters. And so I became the preview chairman for not only the Marin County chapter, but overall chairman for the San Francisco Opera Guild, working with the other coordinators. And can't tell you what an exciting time it was for me. I learned to do so many things I had never done before, including participating in an annual meeting to review what operas we had done the previous year, and then review the planning of what we had previously worked for this coming year. And then everybody was anticipating, what are we going to do next year? And everybody was always curious about that. And it was always strictly confidential because the San Francisco Opera wanted to do their own announcements. And it was always, what are they going to do next time? Who's going to sing? What do we have to look forward to? And so those were exciting meetings. And because I was asked to chair that a group of people, it was called a preview committee, I became preview chairman for the overall Opera Guild as well as the Marin chapter. And I was asked to attend a conference of Opera Guilds International, which was composed of opera volunteer organizations throughout the United States, and was asked to give a report in Portland, where the conference that year was being held. So they were looking for someone to take over the position of coordinating the previews of the Northwest region, which included from Alaska down to San Francisco. And that was a challenge, and an exciting challenge. I was just a little guy from the hex, so to speak, and working with prestigious people, and it scared me, but when you're given a task, you do it. You manage. That became a mantra for me. To this day, I manage, even though you've never done something before, you learn how to do it. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into at that time. And I said, oh, you mean I have to send out a newsletter? I've never done a newsletter. So I got copies of newsletters and sent out newsletters. We had 8 opera guilds in our region as members of the Northwest region of Opera Guilds International. But the Bay Area was such a wealth of interest in opera. There were so many organizations that I would find out about them and attend one of their operas and get in touch with volunteer people and tell them about Opera Guilds International and get them to join, so we could share our knowledge and our expertise. And I did a lot of traveling, and by the time my 2-year term was up, we had 17 members in our region instead of the original 8. So each newsletter that went out, I would say, welcome to this group or welcome to that group. And I went to Boise, I went to Eugene, Petaluma, other cities that were performing, and send them information. And it was a very exciting time. And I keep repeating that probably because it added so much interest to my life. Although I still loved opera, this was a step up, and meeting other people who had the same passion that I did. And so that was a whole nother world for me, and has been ever since.
Can you tell me what years that was, when you were serving as the chairman?
That would be 1982. In the 70s, I went to the previews in Marin and became active in our Marin chapter, but then becoming chairman of the of the regional activities.
It was 82.
That would be the early 80s.
Early 80s, okay.
And going up to Portland, that was the early
80s. Okay, great, thanks.
And the conference is held every 2 years or so for Opera Guilds International. Switches around from city to city. It's a big deal of several days. And then as previous chairman for the OGI, as it was called, I was a member of the board, and I was going on opera tours. And that one early year, I met up with, well, they don't have opera guilds in Europe as we do, but they had an organization called Friends of Opera. And I was in Paris, and I met up with the chairman of the volunteer organization, and told them about what we do in America, mainly with education. And it's so important to keep the interest spreading about opera so that there's an opportunity for newcomers to find out about this wonderful art form. And that was pretty heady stuff, I must say, being at the Paris Opera and meeting with them. And then I went to, I was part of a tour and went to Vienna. And there I met up with the person who was in charge of the Freunde der Wiener Staatsoper, the Friends of the Vienna State Opera. He was actually worked at a TV station, and it was at the time of the Chernobyl meltdown, and he was so busy with that in his TV work, but he still allowed time to meet with little old me. And he said that they don't give money to the opera. It would just go to the general fund of whatever might be used for garbage collection. But the education was performed mainly by families. They didn't have education as part of their friends' organization. And so I told them about how we worked in America and shared our skills and knowledge. And then from there, I went to Munich and met up with the Goethe Institute, and nobody there spoke English, and I had to use my high school German to communicate my spiel of what we do in America. And that was a rather short visit, I must say, but it led me to meet at the opera then, the Bayerische Staatsoper, the president of the Friends of the Bayerische Staatsoper, and he happened to be the public relations person for the opera there. And I told them about opera in America, and it was very exciting. Anyway, when I came back and went to my first meeting of the board of Opera Guilds International, I had lots of exciting information to tell them, and they thought that was pretty exciting. And the only foreign support group was an organization in England, and it led to the furtherance of enjoying opera in different ways. So when my term was up, I must say that because of my spreading the word of opera and the value of volunteers, they wanted me to stay on the board for another term, and they developed a new title, Guild Development Chairman. So I stayed on the board and met wonderful people and grew in my knowledge and my expertise. Suddenly I was expected to be an automatic expert. And I was asked to help companies form volunteer groups. And the first one was in the Minnesota Opera, and we were having a board meeting in St. Paul. And so I prepared information about how other opera companies who had volunteer organizations, and they went by different names, sometimes a guild, sometimes friends, sometimes other titles. And I met up with the director of the Minnesota Opera in my hotel room, and also Des Moines Opera, person in charge there. And to prepare for it, I got in touch with opera guilds in America and had specific questions of how they worked together with the company, whether they were a separate 501c3 a volunteer organization that can get tax deductions for its work, or if they came under the jurisdiction of the parent company. And in San Francisco, we were a separate 501c3, But the symphony volunteer organization, and their groups were called leagues, they came under the jurisdiction of the symphony, and so answered to the parent body with how they handled their monies, their treasury. And when we started out in Marin, we were subsidized by the parent company with some money to help us get going. So there wasn't any specific way of how it had to be. One of the interesting questions was how they handled their bylaws. And so suddenly I became an expert on bylaws. Well, I worked pretty hard in learning so I could answer the questions, and it helped when we formed the Wagner Society here, and we had to answer to the Secretary of State about our organization. And it's amazing how one thing you learn at one time can prepare you unexpectedly for being able to work in other directions. And so it was a wonderful learning experience. A very important part of the volunteer support group, of course, is finding money to help the company put on its work, and also education. And so I had all these questions asked of six different opera guilds, and had that typed out and given ahead of time to the two people that I was meeting with in St. Paul. And then they wanted me to do a workshop in Chicago when we were having a conference there. And little old me, do a workshop? Really? Me? Really? It was pretty heady stuff. So I got me a new suit for the occasion so I could feel up for the job. Funny how that really can help you. I love that suit. I always thought about that workshop. And opera gave me so many opportunities, and people, friends were amazed that I could spend so much money going to different places, and believe me, it's expensive, the hotel bills and the airfare, but the people you meet were all so exciting because they had the same passion that I had. And your passion keeps more passionate as each year passes, and it becomes a way of life. And I feel so grateful that I had a passion that allowed me to grow. So one of the questions I asked was, how do you reward your volunteers? Because they work awfully hard. And there are times when some volunteers don't follow through with their jobs and they're not responsible. They're human. They make mistakes. And I got to thinking about how do we reward people who volunteer? I had a friend who couldn't believe that I would do all that and not be paid. Well, that got me thinking. When I was in fourth grade, the teacher asked us what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I said, I wanted to be a teacher. And oh, the teacher was so pleased. And well, why do you want to be a teacher? So I can be mean to the kids. I was a nice girl. How could I say something like that? Well, anyway, I was so embarrassed that after the lunch period, I was afraid to go back to school. And I don't know what I did that afternoon, but I got over it. I was interested in music, and so in high school, I furthered my interest with the recordings or the broadcasts, and wondered why people did the things they did. And it became interesting how organizations would reward their people. And each one was different, and some people never thought about that. Mm-hmm. And so I became more aware of how important it is that you recognize people for what they're doing, because it's a big effort for whatever organization or whatever field you're interested in. And why do people give so much and not be rewarded? Well, I got rewarded, not only as preview chairman for our Marin chapter, I became president of our chapter and then automatically a member of the board and then automatically meeting up with people and like going to the conferences and I get carried away with what joy I had with all those activities. And my goodness, that was 30, almost 40 years ago. But it's like yesterday. It was so meaningful. And to become a regional director for Opera Guilds International and go all over, It brought little old Mill Valley to the fore in the opera world in many different ways, and then continuing on with guild development, I received awards. And the most prestigious one was through the Opera Guilds International, and they had a program for each guild recommending a person to receive an award, and I received mine. Partners of Excellence, it was called. I have the pin that I was given on my dresser here, and I would wear it with pride. And in order to get that award, there had to be a letter from the volunteer organization president and the director and the company. So the president of the San Francisco Opera and the president of the Opera Guild, and they had to use all this flowery language about the work that I had done. And somewhere I'm going to have to dig those letters out and say, look at me, look at me. Well, that's how you reward volunteers, by acknowledging that their hard work is there and worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And acknowledged by the higher-ups. It's like a company gives you a salary increase, and that's acknowledging that you're doing a good job. And I was rewarded for helping other companies develop volunteer service. And it's amazing when you learn how worthwhile the thousands of hours of volunteer service can be in all the various fields of the opera company's endeavor. And San Francisco Opera Guild happened to have an outstanding educational program, and we shared that with other volunteer support groups. And so they copied many of our programs, and people learned about Little Old Mill Valley because I was always introduced in this hierarchy of the opera world. And opera is considered an elitist art form just because it takes so much money to put on opera. It combines all the arts, and millions of dollars when you get to something like Wagner and his Ring of the Nibelungen. And most companies are not able to afford the kind of singer that is required for Wagner's work. There's a term that's used, Helden tenor. Wagner tenors are scarce and few and far between. So they are sort of in a class all by themselves, and anybody that can sing Wagner is well, with all the stamina. Mm-hmm. The roles go on, the operas go on forever and ever, and instead of a three-hour opera like you might get with Italian opera or operas from the other companies, it'll go on for 4 or 5 hours, and just one aria can go on for 25 minutes, and to be able to get through that, that's really something. Wotan is the chief god in the Ring of the Nibelungen, and he has a monologue that goes on for 25 minutes. And to sing that baritone role, in Siegfried, the third of the four operas in that cycle, he's on stage the whole time. And to be able to manage some operas call for a tremendous range of how high you can go. For instance, in Tannhäuser, another Wagner opera, there are 8 high C's. You hear a Pavarotti in his high C's, but you don't hear about it in Wagner, and be on stage for so long, and then the low notes, and not everybody has that range of music within them. And so you get some singers who are so outstanding because there are certain roles that they can handle. And so they become famous for those roles. And so you get super singers, in, as you do in every world, those who go to the top. And can do such wonderful roles. Well, anyway, Wagner became a way of life for those that there are more books written about Wagner than anybody except Jesus Christ and Napoleon. How about that?
How about that?
And there are new books coming out all the time. And if you become a Wagner fan, as I did, by going to their lectures, their programs, and then becoming a volunteer again, I became the fourth president of the organization. And a fan of, that sounds like a silly title, but it represents what you do. I would go to the Ring of the Nibelung and wherever it was performed, and very few companies were able to do that, so they had to have their volunteers to perform, and it became a way of life for me. I can't stress enough how fortunate I have been to have this world opened up to me and to become a part of it. And I kept going to more and more productions of The Ring of the Nibelungen. Der Ring des Nibelungen, you gotta know your German.
Let me just ask you a question about your role. Were your roles in the Opera Guild and in the Wagner Society overlapping?
Oh, yes.
We're doing them at the same time.
I counted them. Five different major roles at the same time. I was preview chairman and president of the Marin chapter and president of the Wagner Society, vice president of the San Francisco Opera Guild, chairman of the regional Opera Guilds International, and I was also a volunteer for the symphony, and I went out as a docent to schools, both for opera and symphony, to present a program. And I remember for the symphony one time a school was doing or was attending a performance of Shostakovich's opera or symphony that was written about Leningrad and the horror of the 4-year siege of Leningrad and how many people died in that time. And I made it more interesting by including that I had been in Leningrad and had visited the cemetery that was blocks in extent where these thousands of people had been buried. And it added a little more interest to the music that they were going to be hearing. And I always tried to do that to make it more personal. And with the opera, it was the schools would put on their own version, a shortened version of the opera, and we would bring singers and a pianist, usually 4 singers and a pianist, and then a docent who would introduce the program or the opera and in a short version. And the first one, well, I introduced that to our Marin chapter and used someone from the Opera Guild to help us put it on, and I used the members as the students would be, and we were doing Traviata. And when we got to the school, at that time in the beginning, we didn't have the singers. We used slides and tape recordings, and a slide would show the score of the music. And we were supposed to sing. Well, if they had professional singers, the kids would listen to the singers and not sing, and they wanted the kids to learn mm-hmm. to sing. Mm-hmm. So we used Jarmon, the father of the hero, sings. He goes to Violetta, the heroine, the soprano, and asks her to please give up your relationship with my son, because his sister wants to get married into a very fine family. And the father, Germain, can say is, cry, Piangi, Piangi. And I get so mad at that father, and he's asking so much of Violetta. And all he can say is, sympathize, cry, I'm sorry, cry. To this day, when I go to Traviata, and it's one of the most performed operas and favorite operas, because the music is so lovely, and I get mad all over again.
program that you had for the schools, was this how you got your nickname, the Opera Lady?
Well, actually, the Opera Guild had someone who presented us with the information that we would give to the schools and what we would say to the students in the school for, like, an auditorium program. And I didn't do it myself, but I could, in introducing things, add something that was personal. And in order to research and find someone who could present an hour and a half preview, they had to be somebody who was very knowledgeable, who could answer the questions, not somebody who would just look at a recording and the information that comes of the recording. We used musicologists, like a professor who is so knowledgeable of not only music but of opera, has written books. So that's why I would go to the library and look for people who had written books about the specific opera that I was trying to find a speaker for. And I used, there are a lot of series of books, like over 20 books, that would give information about everything and everyone, and look for the bibliographies of who had written books about not mm-hmm. only that composer, but about that opera or in that language. If you're doing a Janáček, composer Janáček's opera, Katya Kabanova, or Yenova, or some of those that are less often performed and less is known about them, you need somebody who specifically knew Janáček. And Beckerman was the man for Czech operas. Then if you had a French opera, you needed someone who was familiar with the French composers or the French operas. And MacDonald, who will be coming here this fall, I had found came from St. Louis. And in order to talk to them and tell them what you want them to do, you have to know the language and you have to be familiar. Mm-hmm. And so you become quite knowledgeable yourself. And I would get the help of the reference ladies at the library to find books that would help me in my knowledge and finding people who can come here. And so I guess that's why they called me the opera lady.
When I was first introduced to you last fall, that's what I was told, is that, oh, Verna, she's the opera lady for Mill Valley.
Oh, that reminds me of when San Francisco Opera was putting on the Ring of the Nibelungen here, and classical voice has articles on the web about all kinds of music, and Maria was asked to write an article about the Wagner's Ring, and it's just called The Ring for short. And she went to Kip Crana, who is the music director of the San Francisco Opera, and to me, he runs the opera. He's been there so long, and it's so influential. And he said, oh, get in touch with Verna Perino. And so she came to my home and by appointment, and we talked about Wagner. And I happened to have a bust of Wagner about 12 or 14 inches high. And she took him off the piano and set him beside me and took a picture of me with that bust of Wagner. And we talked Wagner. And just yesterday, a friend from Australia that I'd met in Melbourne when I was there for the Ring posted on Facebook that picture where there's me and Wagner and my red jacket that I had gotten in Shanghai. I went there for the Ring, and it has come up several times on Facebook, and the article was used by San Francisco Opera Guild in its web programs. And then somebody from the IJ in Santa Rosa wanted an interview at the end of the four operas, because the first one was done in preparation, and how did I like it? How did it meet up to its expectation? And actually, the opera company did it three times, so that was 12 long operas. I went to all three, and the interviewer wanted to talk to me at the opera before the opera started on the fourth opera cycle. And so there I am in the opera house and all by the stage door, and people coming in and all staring at me, and I'm trying to think ponderously about what can I say that's profound about the Wagner, and Wagner's pretty profound. I'll never forget people looking at me and waving and smiling, and that was a bit ticklish, I must say. You get yourself into situations that you really don't expect, but it's expected of you to be profound.
Right, so, have something important to say.
So that picture has shown up on Facebook. Okay. And that's one of the nice things about Facebook. You're in touch with people that you have met all over the world. And the one in Shanghai, they performed the production from Cologne. And I had been to Cologne for the Ring, and they were famous for reducing it to a weekend. So there was the first opera on Friday, and then two on Saturday, and then one on Sunday. That was a little heavy. That was a little bit. And outside the opera house, they had tall banners, one for each of the four operas. And I was taking a picture of the opera house, and someone was taking also. So I asked if he would take a picture of me in front of the opera house. And he happened to be from Oslo, Norway. And so I said, oh, I saw your ring. You saw the ring in Oslo? Yes. And there they had more people buying tickets than they anticipated. And when I got to the opera house into my seat, there was an envelope with my name on it, and they gave me a refund. I've never heard of that being that happening. We're always looking to give money to help mm-hmm. put on the ring. And so talking to this man from Oslo, he was delighted that somebody knew about the opera in Oslo. And when I heard about the ring being given in Shanghai, China, that was pretty far out. And through the International Organization of Wagner Societies, I was able to find out how to order a ticket for the ring. And when I ordered my ticket, I asked for a seat as close as possible to the front, because I was very short and didn't see very well and didn't hear very well, but you could always hear the music. And my goodness, they put me in the first row. And the man in Shanghai that arranged it, Pan Hao, wrote back, and I gave my age. I don't always do that, but when I'm asking for something, I sometimes do. And he wrote back and he said, I would probably be the oldest person in the audience, and would I consent to answer a couple of questions on an email basis? And he sent seven questions to me. So I answered right away. Otherwise, you postpone and you never get it done. And 2 days later, in the main newspaper in Shanghai, and I can spell the word name, but I can't pronounce it, there was a picture of me and my answers to the seven questions, all in Chinese. So I went on Facebook. Anybody out there can translate and tell me what I said? And I got three replies, and the best reply, most accurate, was a friend of my niece in Kentucky who lived in Tennessee, and I used that one, and they used, there's that picture. It was the Cologne Opera production that they were performing, and so it tied in very nicely, and that makes you feel good mm-hmm. when you're able. A lot of people can give a lot of money for the furtherance of opera, but if you can give volunteer service, that's worth a lot of money. Or if you can be used as a gimmick for a publicity thing, that helps them. And so then I flew to Shanghai and was able to take the very fast train from the airport to downtown. They wanted, I was using a wheelchair, and they wanted me to take a taxi. No, I'd read about that train, and I wanted to, and I had to go down with my suitcase and escalator to get on that train, and it was difficult, but I did it. I can manage. I love that expression. And I managed, and somebody helped me get on the train. And then he pointed to a little electric sign in the train above the door inside, and I was going 300 miles an hour. And that was pretty exciting. I had to take a picture of that. And then I took a taxi to the hotel, and it was close to the Grand Theater, a gorgeous square building, Chinese style, with a sloping roof. And there were a couple of friends there staying at the same hotel, arranged through the International Wagner Society's organization. And when before the first opera, Das Rheingold, the Rheingold, a man came up to me and asked if I was Berna Perino. Yes, well, he was the man that had arranged for everything for me. And somebody wanted to meet me. And so he escorted me down to my seat in the first row center. And here was a photographer and the editor-in-chief of that big newspaper wanting to interview me again and wanted to meet me. Well, in China, they revere people of age, and so I was sort of an oddity at my age. I was 93, I think, at that time. And the headline, I think, said, "Woman at 93 longs to see or to attend the ring." Well, it's the way things get translated. And it was so funny, because then people were wondering who the celebrity was that was getting photographed. And there was somebody on the other side of the auditorium who stood up to see who the celebrity was. "My God, it's Verna!" And it was someone from San Francisco, our Wagner Society. So he joined us at intermissions, and afterwards it's the custom of Wagnerians to go have a beer or something and yak about the production, what was good and what wasn't, or what was different. And they had super titles, as we do elsewhere, and they had them both in Chinese and in English, and on the side, and that was exciting. And they used that picture. That's where I wanted to buy something there. And so they were most hospitable at the hotel and helpful to me. And they wrote out in Chinese the name of a silk shop, and then directions to give to the taxi driver. And so he took me there, and they arranged for me to get back to the hotel. And I bought a red silk suit, jacket, and black pants. And it was been interesting. Red shows up nicely in pictures. And the picture they took of me there, there's my red suit holding Wagner's bust. In warm weather, silk is nice to have. So I got a lot of use out of that. But being in China, I typed out at home, or printed out, the name of the hotel in the Chinese and the address. so I could give it to anybody if I got lost. But I stayed pretty much to the opera, and I was disturbed with China, what they were doing to Tibet. This is divergent, but I have to throw it in. I read, there was an architect, very famous, who was credited with the work on the concert hall, and his son lived just above where I lived in Mill Valley, and I wanted to, in my way, pay credit to that architect fan, his name was, and so his home, where John had grown up, had become like an historical marker place. It was a very large, beautiful house, and so the hotel arranged for me to have a taxi driver who could tour me to see that house, and then he also took me to see a church, a Catholic church that had been restored. It had been trashed during the regime of trashing Western culture, and they brought it back to life in its original form, and it looked like the cathedral in New Orleans. Very same style with the two towers, one at each side. And I took pictures of it. And then when I was being, I have to go back. I have to tell you about the interviews. I was introduced to the president of what would be the opera, the ballet, the symphony, and they all met in this building. And we had an interpreter, and I was escorted out there and escorted back in, all big deal. And then for the second opera of Die Walküre, I was asked if I would talk to a TV person. And so I did, and my hearing is so poor that I didn't want to keep saying, "What did you say? What did you say?" So I developed the trick of just talking, and then I didn't have to try to answer questions. And so I knew that they were interested in how Shanghai had changed from when I had been there on a tour 25 years before. So I complimented them about, from this Marriott Hotel, which was 50 stories high or more, everywhere you looked, there were very interesting, very tall, very modern buildings. It was amazing. And so I told them about that. And you could look down, and here were the people walking that looked like ants. And then I told them how pleased I was. I arranged to attend a piano concert at the concert hall. And I told them how pleased I was that they had been able to move that famous concert hall because they wanted to build a freeway where it was located. So the concert hall is in the center of a huge park, a block each direction, and that they were not only having the wonderful new architecture, but they were saving the old and saving the concert hall that the very famous architect, Mr. Fan, had designed, and he had done the university. However, when the communists came in, he went to Hong Kong, so they wouldn't give him credit by name or in any way. Mm-hmm. And I was pleased that I could give his name and give him credit. Uh-huh. And I also mentioned the church, that they had restored the church, and they were now restoring the stained glass windows. And I had read that in someplace, local news in English. And so I was able to credit them. And then I mentioned that as an American, I didn't know very much about China, but what I had learned from a movie I had seen, an old movie from the 1930s, I thought it was, in which Ronald Coleman had performed, and it was about a plane that had gone down in Tibet. And Shangri-La. I remembered the name. Thanks. Mm-hmm. My memory doesn't always serve me, mm-hmm. but I was able to remember that. And so I got my dig in.
You're subversive.
I'm a Scorpio, and that must be my Scorpio dig that I got in. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think I'm usually pretty nice. But
in that case.
I was told by my friend Andy, don't mention it again. Just stay clear. You've done it now. Well, anyway.
Are you ready to take a rest? Are you ready to take a rest?
Well, I'm having a good time.
Are you? Okay, you feel all right?
It's all right. I'd like to tell a little bit about the joy of opera and how having... We had our opera previews finally in Park School. And then when the acoustics were difficult, we moved to the Methodist Church. And we met there for many years. So people from all over Marin came to Mill Valley to learn about opera. And I had a display of books and articles and recordings, and people would be interested. And if it was a Wagner opera, I'd need two big tables to put all my stuff. I had such a collection now, not only of opera, but of Wagner. And I think I must have a recording of every opera there is, either in a disc or a DVD or a CD. And now that books I kept buying to read when I no longer could get out and around, I'm taking advantage of being able to be in my home. I didn't know. I've had some health problems, and convalescing both at Smith Ranch and the Redwoods, and I didn't know if I should try to have an apartment at the Redwoods. I was there this year for convalescence, and our church, the Mill Valley Community Church, has sponsored the Redwoods, And I had been a guide when the Redwoods opened. And then when my mother moved out here and lived in the house we bought next door, she finally needed more care. And she was able to stay at the Redwoods. She had fallen and had to be in the care section for 5 years. And they were so good to her. And my daughter was studying at Tam High, and she could go over and visit her there. And I always thought that I would wind up living there. But when the time came, I wanted to be in my home. And we had bought this, what a realtor called a bungalow. It had 3 bedrooms and 2 baths, and I didn't think of it as a bungalow, but it was a usual size lot, and we planted lots of fruit trees, many, many fruit trees and flowers, and during the time that I lived here, I so loved my house and all my recordings and my apricot, apple, pear, peach, orange, lemon, lime, trees, and 15 varieties of camellias, and flowers everywhere in my lawn. I had to mow uphill. It was exercise, and after my husband died, I continued. And I credit the hard work of keeping up my house and my home and helping me to live so long and to be so happy here in Mill Valley. And to be so involved in the community, being a Girl Scout leader, a Sunday school leader, all the other many ways that I was involved in the, and when we had a revival of the 4th of July parade, I was asked to be in the parade because as a Scout leader, I became the chairman of the neighborhood of Mill Valley and Sausalito for Girl Scouting. And then we became an association. And then we became, I got together with the neighborhood that included Tiburon and Belvedere. And we became the Richardson Bay Girl Scout Association. And to be in the parade, they had a lovely convertible car for me to ride in with a big banner on the side, founding chairman of the Richardson Bay Girl Scout Association. Well, that's one of the benefits that you get when you're a volunteer.
It's called recognition. Yep.
It comes back to haunt you in lovely, lovely ways. And
what year was that? Do you recall?
Well, I can't remember what year that was, but it probably at least 10 years ago.
Okay.
There was a 4th of July parade to celebrate. And then they got away from it for a while. And having had my husband, the Grand Marshal of the 4th of July parade, where we opened the community center, it was, and having helped with that, it was wonderful to sit and ride with my red, white, and blue outfit. I had a blue hat, straw hat, because I need to protect myself, and a red blouse and white pants. And I felt very patriotic, very Mill Valleyan. And one of the advantages of living in such a delightful city, village, town, city of Mill Valley, you know people. Now I don't know so many people, but I used to be so involved in the community. And then being in charge of our previews for 29 years, I guess it was, I'm up in front and people got to know me, and I didn't always know who they were, but I felt so much a part of the community. And you don't get that when you live in a city or in a larger town like San Rafael or Novato. Here we're a smaller community, and the woman who worked at the hat store, I've been going to visit her so I could get my exercise walking, and she was a friend of my daughter. And my daughter, having grown up here in the music department, of Tam High was so extraordinary at the time that my daughter was there and involved. And so on Facebook, so many of my daughter's Facebook friends are my friends because we have a connection through Mill Valley. Mm-hmm. So when the graduates of Tam, I guess it's Tam, they get together for reunions, and so many of the people that are involved are my friends on Facebook now, that it well, even Rita Adams, who wrote the song about Mill Valley, my niece in Florida knew about Mill Valley, and there was a friend of mine, I don't mean to brag, but it comes pouring forth. I have to tell you about this.
Sure.
Life can be so exciting even though you're now 98 years of age. Last fall, a book came out about Wagner and the interesting tidbits about his life and things. And one chapter was about famous people, including Spate Jenkins, who was the general director of Seattle Opera, and I had used him as a speaker here in Mill Valley. And then went to Seattle to see the Ring up there. And another one was Simon Williams, that I'd used as a speaker here many, many times. And so their pictures were there. And then a speaker from London, Brian McGee. He was in that chapter. And then Father Owen Lee, he was from Toronto, excuse me, and very famous. And what do you know, little old Verna Perino's picture was there. Taken in Bayreuth, which is a little town in eastern Germany where Wagner had a theater built, and to this day they still perform only Wagner's works. And I've had the good fortune of getting tickets to attend the Ring there, seven operas, and it's an older theater. For acoustic's sake, it's all wood. It's the most acoustically famous theater in the world. And the orchestra has been put in a pit underneath the stage with a shield that brings the sound up onto the stage so the singers can coordinate with the orchestra sound better than any other place in the world. But the seats are wooden, hard, so you always get a pillow to carry with you. And somebody took a picture of me holding my pillow. That pillow is in my dining room still to this day. And they included a picture of me with all these prestigious people. And I was at Smith Ranch Convalescent Care when it came out, and I was given two copies of that book. And when I was in New York a year ago for the Ring, visiting with someone from the New York Wagner Society, who was with someone from a Wagner Society in Florida, we were visiting, and I happened to say something about, oh, they mentioned how many rings I had attended, and it's, I guess, the most of anybody in the world now. 77 ring productions all over the world, and so I'm famous as the Wagner lady, the ring lady, the ring queen, all these other silly names. And when I said that it was Wagner that kept me going, kept me alive, he said, oh, what was your name? He got all excited, and I repeated my name, Verna Perino. You're in the book. And he had just finished reading that book where my picture was in that chapter. And I thought, oh, my world, the Wagner world is really something else. Mm-hmm. And just yesterday, having the picture with me in my red suit in that article about my love of Wagner that they did for the San Francisco Opera Guild website, and that was repeated there. And so then Leona Graves, who lives in Sydney, who posted it, said I should write a book about my adventurous life. My life has really been adventurous, I must mm-hmm. say, to have had the opportunities through this passion to meet so many wonderful people, to go all over the world, Melbourne, Shanghai, not those were ring productions. I went to Palermo, Sicily. Who would ever go to Palermo, Sicily? And I learned all about the culture. When you have a passion like that, you learn about other cultures. One thing leads to another, and you have friends all over, and they come forth on Facebook every once in a while. And my goodness, it adds so much to your joy of life, and I'm sure it has impacted the number of years that I've lived. I can't say enough about, I count my blessings all the time. And while I don't have much longer to be around, I count every day as I'm here in my home in Mill Valley, little old Mill Valley. Every time I come home from a trip, I'm so happy to be home in Mill Valley. I can't think of anybody that ever has that kind of a passion about where they live. So I'm delighted. Well, Leona said I should write a book about my life. And I said, oh, well, I've been asked to help with the archives through telling a little bit about my life here in Mill Valley. And so, well, I should write about the ring. Oh, well, the section about my involvement with the opera will have mention of the ring and Wagner, as someone once said, it's the creme de la creme of opera. Well, it's almost like a cult, I must say. You can travel and talk about the culture or whatever you're seeing of historical interest. Then, if you mention opera. No, no. If you mention opera...
We won't be able to hear you.
Okay. If you mention opera, you all of a sudden, you're a friend. If you mention Wagner, you're a friend for life. You don't stop talking, chatting about the interest that you share. So you share the places that you've been. And you've been there the same time as somebody else, but you just didn't know each other. Sometimes you do. You see people that you have seen before at a ring production, and you're a friend. You can visit and say, hello, I'm Verna, and you go from there. You can do that with Mill Valley. I have to tell you this. They were doing the ring in Tucson, Arizona, and the man who was general director there had been general director in Seattle, and he puts the ring on every year, and it turned out that I wanted to get in touch with someone who was on the board of the Festspiel, the festival in Bayreuth, was part of the architectural foundation that was just outside of Tucson. And I looked up in my roster who was the president of Opera Guilds, or of the guild there, my roster of Opera Guilds International, and called her, and her name was Jane Clough. And I said, Jane Clough? So I called her to get how to get in touch with this famous board member. And I said, is this the Jane Clough that used to live in Mill Valley? Yes. And taught Sunday school at Mill Valley Community Church? Yes. Well, we had worked together in our Sunday school work when we were studying the festivals that Jesus would have participated in, and we celebrated Sukkot by building a sukkah, which is in remembrance of the exodus from Egypt and the trials and tribulations of finally finding a home. And the Jewish people built a little house on the roof of their houses. And so we had worked together on that and building a little sukkah here in Mill Valley. And so I told her why I was calling. And then I went down there for Die Walküre, the second opera of the ring that they were doing, and went to the luncheon that they, or the dinner that they had preceding the opera, and Glenn Ross was speaking about the leitmotifs, the themes that Wagner used in his work that was new and unusual and famous. And he said, it's like Mill Valley. You meet somebody from Mill Valley and you associate them. He kept saying Mill Valley, and I couldn't hear what he was saying. I was so disturbed. I wanted to know what he was saying about Mill Valley. And so afterwards, I found out he was using Mill Valley as an association for of how you do when you hear a certain melody. You say, oh, that's a sword theme, or that's a love theme, or the hate theme, something. So little old Mill Valley does get around, and I'm pleased that there's such a thing as an archives so that years later we can know how it all got started, like the famous Crooked Railroad, people coming from all over the world to ride that little old Crooked Railroad. And they can come now and attend dinners or affairs in our community center, or where I felt I was a part, or they can find the wonderful stream that goes through the park out Cascade Way, and hopefully, perhaps, get a copy of the map that my Girl Scouts had drawn up to show the wild flowers or plants along that Cascade Stream and see the waterfall. I used to take my brownies there as an outing, and we needed service projects. And it was a junior troop that organized that mapping, and the maps were given out by Granville Beadle, who was in charge of the Chamber of Commerce in that lovely little building by the depot. Mm-hmm. And in front of the depot, the Girl Scouts had for the Easter time the little farmyard with all the this is my Mill Valley. This is what people should know what Mill Valley grew from. Mm-hmm. Today, it's still Mill Valley, but it doesn't have the charm that I felt when I first came here and knew so many people. Mm-hmm. And people have to grow, things have to grow, places have to grow. And I think it's wonderful that the library is devoting with the Historical Society and the oral history. People have been here much longer than I have, that we can go back and live history all over again. So thank you, Nancy, for coming and letting me share my joy of living in Mill Valley. I am so excited about being able to be here in my home across from Boyle Park. I needed exercise and I would walk through Boyle Park over the Little League fields, and we were involved in helping to keep the field green and protected and the children protected over the bridge. And I wrote a poem that I would recite to myself past the picnic areas and the children's swings and the tumblers' rings and the sandbox and the handball courts and around the tennis courts, and come back the way I came, and be wary of dogs, and watch out for the balls, home again the way I came, to live across from the park. And I used to take lessons at the golf course, and I was taught to keep my arms straight, and then a friend told me to relax your arms, and between trying to follow both instructions, I've missed the ball completely. But living in the community club area, in the sunshiny area, so I get all my fruits, I could can my pears, and I just opened up some apricots that I had canned, and frozen applesauce. That's my Mill Valley, the sunshine and the ambiance. Thank you, Nancy.
Verna, it's been such a treasure to be with you for these couple of sessions. And I can hear the passion that you have about Mill Valley and also about the opera and the volunteering that you've done. It's just been such a treat. And you are really a treasure from Mill Valley.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.